11, 10, 9, 7, 5, 3,
sound.
1, start.
Good morning, and welcome to Jonesy, the show that brings you conversations with some of the most interesting people in the world of books, podcasts, radio, theater, music, and humor, guaranteed to entertain and enlighten. I'm the host of Jonesy, Ken Jones, no relation, by the way. On today's episode, we welcome David Osman and Philip Proctor of the legendary comedy group The Firesign Theater and Firesign archivist Taylor Jessen to talk about their latest release, The Firesign Theater Live at the Magic Mushroom. And we truly are in three places at once, with David joining us from Whidbey Island, Phil and Taylor from Los Angeles, and yours truly here in Portland. The new release includes a DVD and booklet collecting all 12 plays from their performances at the Magic Mushroom in Los Angeles from October 1967 through January 1968. These recordings, which had been unavailable for 50 years, mark the Firesign's early days, a period of intense growth and experimentation, and the shows provided material for several of their future albums and appearances, both on stage and on the radio. Our recording session for the interview went over an hour, not surprisingly, given David and Phil's marvelous memories and Taylor providing the historical context on the performances and the Magic Mushroom package. So we'll be playing it all in two installments, part one on today's show and part two to follow on the March 10th episode of Jonesy. It was an absolute delight talking with David, Phil, and Taylor. I think you'll feel the same way as you listen back to our conversation, which is already in progress. David, Phil, and Taylor in alphabetical order, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, it's wonderful to feel joined. I've been falling apart recently.
Glad to be here.
Now, Taylor, the package is tremendous. The booklet, the DVD. So I want to start with you. You're somewhat the unsung hero of the release. The Live at the Magic Mushroom DVD collects 12 Firesign performances. With only one exception, they were all presented live on stage at the Magic Mushroom in Los Angeles, late 67, early 68. And simulcast on radio, on Peter Bergman's Radio Free Oz show. Now, the booklet says these recordings were considered lost for half a century. Were they kind of a holy grail for you and Firesign fans?
Well, to be specific, and to be quite honest, they are still lost. I mean, the fans have known about these shows since Firesign first started talking about them, but I don't think any of us heard any of them until perhaps in the middle of 2001, when there were two fireheads, Alan Olson and Michael Pierce, and another guy whose name I can't remember.
Is it Kat Ishigawa?
Oh, no. What happened was there was a guy who was on Usenet, if we all remember the glory days of trying to get images over an hour from a post made entirely of text on Usenet. In the Usenet days, there was somebody who had put together a big collection of bootlegs and put it all together in a zip collection and just threw it up on Usenet, and people started downloading it. And what we found was there was even more magic stuff in there that nobody had heard ever, like Firesign at the Ash Grove in November of 1970. Just a slew of rarities. In there were some of the Magic Mushroom shows. And that was when I started looking for recordings of them. Now, David had several of these in his collection. The Nightmare started when we found the box. The box, which was full of open reel tapes. These tapes were probably made not at the Magic Mushroom, but maybe back at KRLA, just as backup for the show, and also probably so that it could be syndicated to the station in San Francisco that was playing them maybe a week later. Radio Free Oz was playing in LA, but it was also being syndicated out of town to at least one other, you know, alternative station. when you look in this box, unfortunately, what you found was that there were three tapes made for each show. Radio Free Oz was 3 hours long. It was captured on three open reels, half hour to each side. And most of the shows had the Magic Mushroom play performed in the middle hour. Every one of those middle hours had been cherry picked. We don't know by whom, but they are long gone. So we figured all the master tapes for the Magic Mushrooms were gone forever. What we found is that one of those shows, the first show, they didn't do the Magic Mushroom show in the middle hour, so it survived. And not only that, when we listened to the master recording, we found that it had a missing Magic Mushroom play on it too, the Seance. But honestly, what you're hearing in this box set is the cleaned up versions of the best available versions that we could find. And who we really have to thank for these are the super fans like Kat Ishikawa and others who recorded these shows in LA at the time off of the radio. And, you know, once you take off the hum and the static pops and the sound of all the cars going by on Ventura Boulevard, they sound pretty good. You can understand everything. And it sounds exactly like, it really has the same affect as an old Goon show in more ways than one. It will sound, it's got, you know, live audience. It's very Goony in the content and in the performance. And it really does show off the fact that these are a bunch of guys who are playing to a bunch of people who tried to get in on a Sunday night by lacing 100 feet of popcorn and getting free admission. Those kind of obsessed people who would come in and really get the joke and have a good time. And yes, there are cars going by outside. It was done for just a couple of 100 people live, but there were probably, you know, it's a 50,000 watt station. There were thousands of people listening to it at home. That's where those recordings came from. Cassettes made by fans. And all I really tried to do was rescue them at the best, closest to the source that I could.
You mentioned the good sound of it. It reminded me of kind of the early Beatles shows in Hamburg, where the sound, unfortunately, was not quite as good as this. Apparently, it was somebody's tape recorder and one mic in front of the stage.
Oh, God, that's great. We sound better than an old Beatles recording. Yeah. I'm feeling better already.
You do, but what got to me was these were both recordings of kind of artists mastering their art, learning their craft. So the Magic Mushroom shows were such a revelation to me. And I wonder, David and Phil, to you too, when you were listening back, I mean, you probably hadn't heard these in many years.
I must admit, I actually promoted our record on KPFK yesterday on a live show where it all started. And as I was listening to them, the excerpts that they were playing, I just felt the vitality and the incredible dedication that we had when we did those shows. We were all at the top of our mark. We were young. We were fast. We were articulate, and we were very surreal and very funny. And it really did. It captures the spirit of that which brought us together on Radio Free Oz and as a group that became the Fireside Theater. And the thing that's really remarkable about our career, of course, is that we continued to grow together and to create even more layered and complicated surrealistic pieces. But when you listen to these wonderful raw live recordings, you can hear our ability to create characters as well as to build a world in your imagination that is absolutely crazy, but it's safe to become a part of it, if you kind of know what I mean.
No, I was amazed just listening to the very first show on the DVD, which is Exorcism in Your Daily Life. The characters, the writing, the timing, your voices are meshing. It doesn't seem like four people just getting together and having fun at the club. It seems like there was some chemistry going on, some magic.
I thought exactly the same thing about the Hamburg basement. I thought where we were in that club on Ventura Boulevard, you know, I remember it had a pool table in the back. There were a couple of hundred people in there, but it was a concert venue just like that. And it was in the valley, which is sort of like Hamburg anyway.
Right.
That feeling definitely was the first thing that I got when I was listening back to them then. It was like, oh, this is like the Beatles playing in the club, and they're just like getting it together, and maybe they'll get a new drummer. No, he's like, you know, it was
glad we didn't.
And the other thing that isn't Goonshow like about these is that there are two or three that are really part of our anti-war protest underground theater, whatever you want to call that. Certainly, Freak for a Week was directed at everybody who was taking advantage of hippiedom and that whole world of that was
experimentation
being formed at that
freedom, experimentation, and defiance.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But what would happen to it? Well, it becomes a corporation. You know, and I mean, the way that builds, the way that piece builds, it's really telling people, don't take this too seriously and don't take it too far. After all, you're just selling beads. You know, this is not, you know, true. And Greek is one of those. And Austin's Indian piece.
Very deep.
Is, as I said in my note about it, you know, the audience expecting to laugh themselves silly, and suddenly it's full of Algonquin and this rhythmic kind of language that Phil employed for that particular piece.
I thought a lot of that was you, David, with the poetry, the lyricism of it.
Phil's mom taught English, and one of the things that she taught Phil Austin was Vachel Lindsay. Boom-a-lay, 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 boom. Phil wrote naturally these pieces, and there's two more long pieces. And think of Past the Indian, Please. You know, what's the way they say, and they did a little, and it was, you know, that kind of writing was very much Phil.
When you listen to All the Magic Mushroom Plays as a piece, you really get, I hope everybody gets, the same thing that I get from Firesign, which is these guys weren't committed, not they were committed to making a really interesting theatrical performance first and foremost. They were really funny. Yes, that's a bonus. But these are guys who would not be afraid to go on stage and say a line like, in the beginning, there was no beginning. They made up beginnings later to prove to themselves that it was later. That's not just a funny line. That's the kind of line where you hear it, you're going to fall off your chair when you hear it. The whole experience is like that, where it's not, they want to make you laugh, but on their way there, they're also interested in just completely blowing your mind.
There's one piece I want to mention, David, the one you mentioned that Phil Austin wrote, A Shadow Moves Upon a Land, and it's on the DVD. And you had a line that really struck me in here. It was your character as a narrator in here. And I'm quoting, what is it about this country, about this thing called white man? White man is an adjectival distinction describing a human being of any race, creed, or color who finds it impossible to leave nature or man alone. White man is he who must control, must fight the elements. It's the condition of white man to be unhappy because what he tries to do is patently impossible. The Indians could tell him how to live. They're very helpful that way. What's left of them. I'm just wondering, what was the audience reaction? That's beyond comedy and satire. That's,
well, when you know, it was totally beyond comedy and satire, completely so. You can hear the audience's reaction. They are stunned and silent for a good ways into it until they get what's going on here. That was an adaptation. We did three quote documentaries. Peter wrote one on Hopi prophecy. I wrote one that was purely historical, and which all the quotes are historical, you know, no good Indian, but a dead Indian, as all historical quotes. And Austin wrote this poetic piece. Interestingly enough, sidebar but short, there is a professor who is writing a book, and we are chapter 6 of that book. We were extraordinarily influential in furthering the so-called independent Hopi nation. And Radio Free Oz, Peter Bergman, and along with us, he talks about how many specific quotes are in Temporarily Humboldt County, in the Indian piece that's on the very first album, that the my lines about here comes the white brother and all of that, that is right out of the Native American emerging independence movement that is being supported by a lot of white guys, you know, whom we all knew. He sent me chapter six. I sent it on to Taylor. And it's just amazing how much significance at that moment that had. And that audience is sitting there. That's like, you know, that's like being in the underground, being down, saying, should we try this? And, you know, I think it's very free form that we could get away with something like that without losing our audience, you know.
You know, the only thing in recent times that comes off in the same way to me that Firesign did in their live performance was when they did a show with Culture Clash in LA. They were getting the same kind of changing reactions from the audience. They did an early version of their piece, Chavez Ravine. That was a very funny performance and goes to some very dark places. And what's important is that you and your audience are really angry about the same things. That has a big impact. And this Firesign and their audience were on the same wavelength.
Yeah, it seemed to me enormously brave. I don't know what the audience was like at the Magic Mushroom. I read it had opened just a few months before you started playing there and was serving healthy drinks as opposed to liquor and alcohol. But L.A. at that time, there was so much happening. There was, I want to talk a little bit about, too, Peter's Lovin' in Elysian Park. Apparently, he just kind of put the word out. 60,000 people showed up, and it was his
initial. We did a lot of advertising. We advertised it on the radio. I mean, he created the word Lovin', sold Lovin' kit. And for a Lovin' kit, you got an Oz button and a bumper sticker and a poem. And it was a dollar, only a dollar.
Right.
And that was Pete. That was Uncle Pete. He was really amazing. He turned that around and at the same time got from KPFK Community Radio to KRLA border to border 100,000 watts on that same Easter Sunday. And then almost immediately got a movie writing contract and it vanished.
I read he left for a few months.
And Proctor was in a play somewhere doing something, of course, like Proctor was always doing. So I think Austin and I went to the Pasadena hotel where the radio station was. And we went in there every Sunday and in the afternoon to keep the spot open. So when we come back in the fall, we'd have that Sunday night show.
It's very true. During the course of our career, one of the reasons why we had such longevity was because we did allow individual members we allowed life to happen to us without destroying the core of that which we wanted to do. I think that during the Indian discovery period, when you guys actually physically went to visit the Hopi land, I was doing a movie called A Safe Place, Henry Jaglom's first movie with Tuesday Weld, Jack Nicholson, and Orson Welles. So, you know, we were in two places at once when we weren't anywhere at all. And we all bring back from our experiences, we had the group to bring it back to. We had a body of work that we could create out of our separate experiences. And that's, to me, was always the core of the joy of working together. That whatever it was that you did, you could come back home. That door was always open. And even though we went through the normal kinds of agonizing separations and things because of what life was throwing at us, we managed to reunite at important times in the world, in culture, and continue to create and grow together. In fact, we were talking about the next release that we may be putting out are the Rhino records that we did, which were kind of the end of our recording career. But I want to say one thing about what Firesign Theater has always meant to me. I'm a professional actor and have done television and films and stage. Stage is supported by an audience. Film and television, unless it's a sitcom, not so. But we were on listener-supported radio. That's where we began. Our career was supported by our audience. We put out records and as unidentified flying objects, and they were identified. People listened to them and wanted more of them. And they did that by buying them, so which gave confidence to the record company that we might, you know, carry on. And there's stories about that, too, I can tell, but not right now. That's the reason why we put out the Magic Mushroom shows, because Taylor found that listeners who were supporting us had recordings that we could use. So it wasn't lost because of the amazing audience that's out there for the Fireside Theater.
So much of the Fireside product has been made available exclusively because we could find content from the fans. Alan Olson and Michael Pierce are pretty much the reason that there's a Duke of Madness Motors. They saved so many of those original radio shows from 1970, 71, and 72. The fans have kept a lot of stuff that slipped out of or never made it into the Fireside archive.
Phil, since we were talking about the Beatles a little while ago, and they kind of came together, what you kind of were joking about it when they found Ringo, you know, they replaced their drummer. You write in the booklet that, and your essay's titled "The Magic of the Mushroom," you write, "It still amazes me that four such disparate souls, Peter and me, who I first collaborated with at Yale College Theater in 1960, the Yale Dramatic Association, and Phil Austin and David Osman, who I met on the air at KPFK in 1966, could become creative and artistic brothers instantly and turn out so much long-lasting material over the next decades." I wonder how you mesh so quickly, became these creative and artistic brothers instantly, where the Beatles, you know, had to trade drummers. You guys were all right there at the beginning.
If there had been a drummer to trade... funny when Austin created his own group, it was the replaced drummer was Harry Shearer.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Now you put Harry Shearer and Phil Proctor in the same room and ask me to choose between them, and I would be hard put.
Well, we have been in the same room,
and we have been in the same
room. He's been right here in this house. I do want to say this. In my book, co-authored by Brad Schreiber, Where's My Fortune Cookie, available somewhere, I tell the story, the almost psychic coincidental story of how I connected with the Fireside Theater. And it had to do with being with Peter Fonda and Brandon DeWilda at the protest on the Sunset Strip when I sat on an open copy of the LA Free Press, and I sat on Peter Bergman's face. I pulled it out in front of me, and there was a picture of Peter Bergman interviewing some returning war veterans for KPFK. It said KPFK newsman, Peter Bergman. So the next day, after we bailed Fonda out of jail, I called Peter Bergman, and he said, "Yeah, I'm the Wizard of Oz." I thought, well, that's the end of him. He's really gone off the deep end. He said, "No, it's a radio show. It's a counterculture call-in talk show." He invented that format down at this radio station. He said, "Come on down and play with us." And certainly I did. And that's when I met the guys. And yes, we clicked instantly. And I think it's magical. I really do. Somehow all of our theatrical experiences from different aspects of theater came together in that very first moment. Plus, the fact that we're all fire signs is another astonishing and magical thing. So I think it's a unique adventure that we committed to, because we did. We had to, you know, all of us had to realign our concepts, our goals, and trust in what we were doing. And I think we did it because we felt joyful together. Right, David?
Yeah, right from the very beginning, we when we did the Oz Film Festival and everybody improvised basically in two characters. So there were six of us in Pete.
Yeah.
And right from that moment, the classic story is we walked out with the phone ringing and people saying, how can you possibly censor that movie? This was a movie that didn't exist that we were showing on the radio.
Well, let me explain a little bit. One of the yeah. characters, yeah, the Oz Film Festival was a complete elaborate joke, hoax that Bergman created. And we were the directors whose films were being shown. I played Jean-Claude, who had done a French documentary called 2 Weeks with Fred, where I follow my friend Fred doing everything he's doing. So when it is screening, if he goes to the bathroom, you can go to the bathroom. If he wants to sleep, he sleeps. You can't sleep 8 hours, then he get up, you know. So that was me. David was Raul Zayas, and he was pushing 35mm dropping 35mm films off of the Andes or something, right?
It was the movies in motion, you know. I had to call them motion pictures, and most of them have no motion at all. So to get that motion, I had to go way up in the Andes with a big fucking cameraman, had to take this big camera and push it. Boomity, 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 boomity. Very exciting motion. Movie, man. Very exciting.
Yeah, Phil Austin played Jack Love, I think that was his name.
Yeah.
Dressed in leather, and he was doing movies for the bedroom, basically. And he wanted to show one of his movies, Blondie's, an excerpt from Blondie Pays the Rent. And so he started playing it. And Bergman said, no, stop, stop. No, you can't show this movie on the radio. It's obscene, and the FCC will take us off the air. And the phones lit up, right, David?
That's right.
People protesting.
Immediately. This is the liberal KPFK community audience.
Man, you can't do that.
And as I say, we, the four of us, having never done anything together before this moment, looked at one another and said, well, we can do anything.
We got them.
They'll believe anything we say.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go.
Well, that's all for this episode of Jonesy here on KBOO Community Radio. If you missed any part of the show, would like to hear it all again, you can listen anytime on demand at kboo.fm/program/Jonesy, Jonesy, or just search for it on the KBOO website. Before we head out the door, a big thank you to our guests today, David Osman and Philip Proctor of the legendary comedy group The Firesign Theater and Firesign archivist, Taylor Jessen. You can find out more about their latest release, The Firesign Theater Live at the Magic Mushroom, and all Firesign news and projects on their website, firesigntheater.com. Just a reminder that KBOO is in the middle of our winter drive, which we like to call All Thrills, No Frills, or He's No Fun, He Fell Right Over. We're trying to raise $15,000 by February 23rd, and we could use your help. KBOO is true listener-sponsored community radio. We get over 80% of our funding from our members, listeners like you. You can support programs like this and independent media by becoming a member today. It's as simple as going to the KBOO website, kboo.org, and clicking on the big donate button, or you can text KBOO to 44321. Together, we can keep KBOO going strong throughout 2022, which marks our 54th year on the airwaves, and hopefully many years to come. All of us here at the station, even Jonesy himself, thank you for that. Jonesy, by the way, comes to you every other week on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month from 11 to 11:30 a.m. Tune in for part two of our interview with David Osman, Philip Proctor, and Taylor Jessen on our next show, Thursday, March 10th at 11 a.m. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying,
goodbye, friends, and happy motoring back on the freeway, which is already in progress.